So, give me your overall ratings. Start with Rachel.
71.
Oh, I forget to add them up all the
time.
Doug?
77.
Can you come back to me?
75.
76. Well, if Melinda comes in reasonably close.
Why'd you just be like, 85? Wait!
No, it's not.
Hers is 37.
52, there we go.
Okay, someone do math for me. This is why I'm not a stats major. See, there's minus.
Doug will do that for you.
Yeah, 23.
Yeah, there's 10.
33, 63.
Wait, 63. Oh, okay, you're adding them to it.
33, 63. 75. 75 plus 8.
See, so mine was higher, 83. Sorry.
And you want to change yours, Rachel?
No, I'm just saying, I left my printout
at home,
so I emailed this to you.
I saw the email come in.
Because the thing I'm wondering if they're higher is because I remember the last time we did this where you're like, we don't want to hit them again for doing something bad.
Twice. So double jeopardy.
Yeah, so I tried to be a little bit more lenient because I would have taken off probably more on the procedures because they weren't, because they're fairly decent procedures, but they weren't supported by the literature review. But I'd already hit her on the literature review, so.
I took the same procedures.
See, what I would say is if the literature review were poorly done, mm-hmm. but the procedures followed that literature review. So in other words, if the procedures were consistent with the poor literature review, then I wouldn't take them off double that. But if the procedures are not consistent with whatever literature review they did, then I think it deserves to have points taken off, and I will take them off yours.
Okay. I've been very, very, very careful in writing my paper to make sure everything, even if it's wrong, to make sure they all fit together.
Okay.
Even if I come to the wrong conclusions.
I don't think I've passed this form out before. So as you write your papers, pay attention to this, and then hand it in with your papers as well. And we're going to use this today as we talk about this article a little bit. But let's start with the problem statement. So real quickly around the table, 25 points. What'd you give it, Rachel?
18.
Doug?
18.
Melinda?
23.
18.
20.
Oh, boy, if it had all been 18 but Melinda, we would have said.
I know.
Okay.
I guess that was too nice.
Here's how I outline her problem statement. Whoops.
It doesn't like you. It works. Power bar works, but not the... Oh, it isn't plugged in. That would help.
Okay. So I'll read through that, see if that's a reasonably good rendition of what it says. Than that?
Like it was there, but it was really jumbled.
Okay. Okay, so let's assume that that's what it says. What you like and not like about it?
It's really, really long.
2, 4, 6 steps. Maybe the steps are a little wordy, but I'm not too concerned about that. I mean, it makes it harder to understand, and so the harder it is to understand, but. Doug, what do you say? You gave it an 18.
Well, and I was being a little generous, I think, but I'm not sure how it's an argument leading up to the conclusion. So we just sort of have some facts and then an idea to do fictional literature that will probably help. I'm not seeing how spreading or coping versus succumbing, you know, how do those really relate to what they're doing?
Excellent point. Okay. So you could take out steps 3 and 4 completely and it wouldn't change the argument at all.
Right.
Even, I mean, if you took them out, it becomes a little more clear that there is no argument, but they certainly don't contribute to the argument. Okay. So it really is just a set of related statements. So it seems like what happened was that this person looked up facial disfigurement and attitude towards facial disfigurement, and then had a bunch of articles, and then had to do something with all those articles, okay? And that's not the point. So remember, putting a problem statement together correctly, you have to be willing to discard information, to say, I know I spent 18 hours reading these 14 articles right here, and they're all on a related topic, but they really don't contribute to the argument I'm trying to make. So I just set them aside. I may use them in a later paper to do something else with, but they don't help me make the point. So a good problem statement sets out premises that are true, or that you're going to prove to be true in your lit review, but that you are asserting to be true. It sets up a conflict or a problem between those statements, and then it solves that problem. Okay? What else?
There was kind of a disconnect between why the study needed to be done, other than fictional literature could help. I mean, there's no statement of previous studies have found that.
Well, sort of is implied. I mean, it could have been said better, yeah. But it says fictional literature is a good way to help children.
Right, that was my problem, that fictional literature would be a good way to help children who become familiar with people who are handicapped, but what does that have to do with disfigured children?
Right.
Disfigured children aren't necessarily the same thing as handicapped children.
Okay, that's a good point.
She kept using that phrase disabled throughout the entire paper, or he did, isn't he or she?
That's not a number.
Okay, they kept on using the phrase disabled, and they would use that in regards to physical disfigurements, or they would talk about deafness, which is not a physically noticeable thing. So,
but it's a disability.
It is a disability, but I'm trying to figure out where the link was as far as that with the literature. But besides that, handicap is a very vague term as far as describing disfigurement.
Yeah, this is a fairly old paper, and so at that point, handicapped was much more in vogue. So, I mean, there's some politically correct or incorrect wording here, but I sort of overlook that right now. Okay, what if one of the things we said, it's not a big thing in writing a problem statement, but you'll lose a couple of points for it, is that last sentence should not only say you're going to do a study, but should give me an idea of how you're going to do the study. So that wouldn't have been very hard to incorporate into this, to say, therefore, a comparative study will be done in which children who are read a book about handicapped children will be asked to rate pictures and then compare to a group of children who were given a placebo or something. Okay? So, okay, now, the point I just made, I don't do very well on this one either, but so I'll take a couple points off. So here's another problem statement, which doesn't try and follow what she wrote, but let's call it a she, I'm really not sure. But does sort of step back and say, if I were going to try and write a good problem statement, that I'm then going to have to go out and see if the literature supports it or not, here's, I think, a better effort at doing that. So I'll give you a moment to digest it.
Is a fictional literature study helpful?
Yeah. There are a significant number of people.
Okay. Who,
yeah. So to step number four, now that I'm reading it, I'd probably add a phrase that says something like, the most successful and easily implemented interventions are those that use vicarious experiences, such as reading stories to children, but these have never been used with facial disfigurement. Therefore, this study will evaluate whether reading stories about children affects our attitudes toward children with facial disfigurement. And then I should add something that's going to be a comparative study. Okay. So Now, if you look at your little sheet here, the self-evaluation, so the first thing you would have done with this is to try and list the bulleted outline, which would have been these steps here. And then if this were your paper, you would look at it and say, well, wait a minute. You know, this really isn't presenting a logical argument. It isn't setting up a conflict. There is no problem here. I wonder what that one about spreading and about coping versus succumbing. I really don't need that in here. So hopefully you're all able to see it in other people's work. It's a lot tougher to see it in your own. But that's where it would be very useful to either exchange papers with someone in the class or talk to a significant other in your life and say, make some bullets of this and see if it makes sense. And are any of those steps unnecessary or whatever? I mean, it's tough to see the forest because of the trees sometimes. Okay? All right, so we've got not a very good problem statement, which makes it tougher to do the review of literature. But if we use her problem statement, how well did she do in the review of literature in terms of following the outline that she set up in the review of literature?
Starting page 3, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So we skipped over the objective for a minute, but we'll come back to it.
Well, the first part of it is just sort of some anecdotal reports, you know, which can be okay. I'm not going to be too, you know, tough about that, I guess, because she's just trying to show that culturally this is a phenomenon that occurs. Children with facial disfigurement are criticized, and it's almost axiomatic. Well, it's not axiomatic, but I mean it's pretty well understood that kids that look different do get teased. The part after that, though, I just cannot understand why this person split the studies. So they gave us the intro of each study with no results, and then later on talked about the results in another section. That was just beyond me why anyone would do that.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sort of the second part was trying to talk more about assessment, but there would have been a lot of better ways to have pulled that off.
Yeah.
You know? And you find yourself reading the same stuff twice and wondering the first time when you read it what really happened, and yeah, I'm not sure what they were getting at. Okay, but go back to these anecdotal reports. The key in whatever you put in your lit review is to make sure it's supporting an assertion in a systematic way. Nothing wrong, in fact, there can be a lot of good in trying to give people a feel for what the research is like or what the experience is like or whatever. But that should then relate back to, you should only do that if that's a key element of your problem statement. And if it's not, then take it out. Again, it gives the impression here that this was stuff that they had read, they had been struck by it, thought it was interesting, and so it had to go into the review of literature somewhere. That's not what you want to be doing. Okay? So you have to keep asking yourself how well it contributes to providing evidence of what the assertion is you're trying to make. Okay, what else about their review, their analysis of studies there?
There was no quality measure. They never stated this quality was good because of, this quality was poor because of, it was included because, or it was excluded because.
Right.
Or any statement of, I reviewed 16 of this kind and 20 of that kind. And it was kind of all over the board. Like I said, again, they're discussing a variety of different physical disabilities and they aren't really classified into any specific area. They're all just falling under the area of disability.
But that may be because there's so few studies out there. It's not an area I know anything about. But I mean, that wouldn't bother me if it were done systematically. And if it were done with the rationale of saying, if you take attitudes towards disabled people in general. There's only two or three studies with mentally retarded, one with speech and language impaired, one with deaf. But across the board, it seems that by exposing them to vicarious literature, the negative attitudes are decreased. But it's never been done with facial disfigurement, and facial disfigurement has some other issues associated. Now, if you make such a strong case that this works with every kind of disability there is, then you undermine the logic you're making of why you need to do it again with facial disfigurement. I mean, you don't want to, I started to say you don't want to answer all the questions unless they really have been answered. I mean, if the appropriate jumping off place is to not do this kind of study again, but to do a different one, then make that point. I mean, if I knew that giving kids orange juice increased the IQs of Chinese kids, Mexican kids, African Americans, Native Americans, would I really need to do it again with Czechoslovakians? It's not sufficient reason to say it hasn't been done with this group, therefore we need to do it. But you might come up with a rationale for why Czechoslovakians are different. You say Czechoslovakians have no citrus fruits in their culture, so they've never been exposed to this. And so maybe it'll work differently with Czechoslovakians than it does with all those other people. I made that up, just don't go back and tell people that Czechoslovakians. So it's not sufficient to say just because it's never been done with this subgroup, we need to do it with them. But there may be a legitimate rationale for why it's important to do it with a subgroup with whom it hasn't been done. Okay?
I think one of your first points was true and needed a little more expounding upon. We don't know how much literature there is here, and this person does nothing to let us know how much literature
right.
is there. There's no inclusion criteria, exclusion. There's nothing that lets us know anything about it.
Right, that. Right. And it, as an outsider looking at it, it's a little hard to know. One of the good ways of doing that is to look at previous reviews of the literature, if there are any. And so you can say other people have tried to review this literature. They found 47 studies. And remember the one on Ginkgo biloba, where they had cited one review that did 44 studies or something like that, but then they only turned around and cited 6 studies. So you say, wait, I know there's more out there. And unless there are clear exclusion criteria on why you don't cite the other 38. Okay. So your job is to convince the reader that you've got either a comprehensive sample of the evidence on that topic or at least a representative sample of the evidence on that topic. And you'll do it in 6 different ways, but you still need to do it somehow. Okay, well, what are the points about this review? So it didn't do a good job of looking at quality. Didn't follow the outline very well. What sorts of things did you like about it?
It might have been accidental, but when I went through the table, I starred the studies that had results that had any kind of empirical, statistical, any kind of results that I could get my hands on that I thought were maybe convincing. And the videotape discussion one, which had a reasonable effect size, and the information handlers, 82% of the 18 students felt their attitudes to be more positive, and the Jones, middle one on the second page there, that had a significant effect. So. Looking at those, now the other ones are just kind of just reports and they may or may not be correct, I don't know. But if you just took those three, you kind of get an idea that watching a video discussing it and interacting about what they saw is effective. And that is actually what they're proposing to do. And I don't mean to be too facetious, that might have been an accidental thing though. I think they came into this with the idea that they are going to do this study with the storybooks doesn't really matter what the
right.
research says.
In fact, probably they'd already done the study when they did the review of literature. Okay. So, but yeah, and I don't know whether it was accidental or not. I don't know in which order they did the review plus and the study. But again, as a reader, you shouldn't have had to dig that out of it. It should have. They should have made that point clear. And so remember the fourth criteria of saying, are your conclusions explicitly linked to your data? So you should make it, that's the point you want to make, or if you think that's what the data is telling you, then make it clear to the reader. So don't be like the Challenger disaster where you have to dig it out, you know, make it jump out and hit you in the face. Okay, what else did they do nicely? I thought that the table on page 6 and 7, or 9 and 10, I think it really is, sorry. It wasn't perfect, but it was a nice table. That helped me. How many of the studies that they cited in their review of literature made it into that table?
Right.
You know?
Never come in. It should help clarify some things.
Actually, most of them did. I mean, they do cite 2, 4, 6 other studies, but they're cited in sort of the not as studies. So all of the ones that they, at least from the context, sounded like they were real studies, made it into their table. So that's good. What else?
It showed a coding system, which was nice to see, where they were classifying it by grade level and giving a brief synopsis of results. For me, it was the table was more organized in the way it was written.
Okay.
And it added clarity for me.
Yeah, I thought the table was nice. It doesn't really show a coding system. It shows
the
results, perhaps. I mean, I'm not sure they had a coding system, but yeah, that's good. Okay, what else? What was the overall score you gave it, Ryan?
That was pretty generous. I gave it a 97.
Melissa was the high until, Melinda was the high until now.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, I was in a generous mood when I...
Okay.
What was yours?
80. You added that, but I didn't write it.
83.
83. Oh, wow.
83. Yeah, everyone else was in
the others were down around 70, 68.
Okay.
So. Okay, good.
So what would you give the review of the literature? Because I like to know how far off base I am.
I gave the review of literature 25 out of 40.
Okay. And how about the problem statement?
I gave the problem statement 18 out of 25.
Okay.
So that's a C, isn't it? Yeah, 70%.
70% is a C, yeah. C-.
Yeah, so.
Still graduates. Sorry.
Depends on how many of those classes you have. Okay. All right.
I don't have any of them, so I'm okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I should say yeah. That's right. I haven't finished this one yet. Okay. Yeah.
All right. We're going to come back and talk a little more about the review in a moment, but let's look at the procedures for just a moment. One of you said, yeah, it wasn't a bad study. So when I grade your papers, what am I going to be looking for in the procedures primarily?
That they're based off of your literature review. That's
right.
That.
That's right. I'm going to say, is what you're proposing in your procedures something that you could have written without ever having done this literature review? And if it is, then you're in trouble. Okay. So it should be clear from your lit review what needs to be done next and why it needs to be done, and then your procedure should be consistent with that. How well did she do that?
I didn't look at it that way, so I'm not asking you.
Well, you'd better look at it that way in a couple weeks.
Now that I see it that way, yeah. Well, she did take into consideration the different reaction between gender.
She did.
She found from the literature review.
Okay, when does she bring up the issue about gender?
On page 13.
Right, so it's after her lit review is finished.
It was mentioned earlier, I think it was in an introduction, that there was something about a female's reaction versus a male's reaction.
Wasn't it when she was describing the study?
Maybe. I thought it was brought up one other place before, but she really didn't kind of elaborate on it.
Yeah, I don't remember it being brought up someplace before, but it may well have been.
Oh, it's in the, is it in the table?
Yeah, it's in the table.
Where I saw it somewhere. Yeah,
oh, it's in the table.
It's,
in the table.
It's on the second page of the table. First thing.
Oh, yeah. Females have that reaction. Females
are unwilling.
Okay, so I didn't remember seeing it there, so that's good. So I'll get it there next time. So now, we've got one of 9 studies that say males were willing and females were unwilling. Is that enough to make it one of the central parts of your procedures? I mean, I'm assuming if they coded this carefully, quite an assumption, that the other 8 studies didn't find differences between girls and boys. So if 8 of 9 studies found no differences between girls and boys, does it become an important issue to include? It might be. I mean, maybe that was the best done study. Or maybe it was the only one that looked at girls and boys. Maybe none of the others did.
But there wasn't really a discussion.
Right, but I don't know. So I'm left to guess. And so your point, when you write that procedure section, is to make sure that the reader doesn't have to guess why you're including that variable. You're including it because based on your careful analysis of the lit review, that's a critical variable to understand this phenomenon. You know, and you've supported that with previous research. Okay. What other variables did they include in their design? So grade, 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade. Any rationale for why they're doing 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders based on the lit review?
No.
No? I mean, there are 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders in the lit review, but there are some who aren't, too. They included urban versus rural. Is that mentioned in the lit review any place?
No.
Let me see. Just check one thing. Yeah. So we know based on the what's on page 13 is that both Maurer and Cerrito looked at boys versus girls, and Maurer is the one that has it in the table. Cerrito's also in the table, but doesn't talk about boys versus girls. Oh, in fact, this is interesting. Look at Cerrito on page 9. There were no boys in Cerrito. It's just girls.
That was a difference.
Yeah. So I wonder.
Oh, wow.
So I wonder how Cerrito brought that out in their study.
That kind of negates the other studies, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, the story by Maurer showed the differences of males versus females, but that was not cited.
Well, it on page 13 it says that an important consideration brought out in several studies, Maurer and Cerrito, is a difference in reactions according to sex.
Okay, because Maurer has boys and girls.
Yeah, but Cerrito only has boys or only has girls. So, okay, so what about the instrument that they chose to use in this study? They're going to use Rapier's, the Rapier rating scale.
Yeah, used twice in the literature.
Any logic given about why that's the right instrument to use? Well, some of the guys used it. A lot of others used something else.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you go back to your self-evaluation form, so go to number 5. A review of the literature should provide systematic support for each of the assertions made in the problem statement. 2, establish what is known in this area so that the proposed study starts from the correct jumping off point. 3, based on a critical analysis of previous research in similar or related areas, identify how future research in this area can best be conducted. which research designs, approaches, instrumentation, analytical techniques are best and most appropriate for the proposed study. So you don't get much of that. I mean, I think what they've proposed is a fairly decent sounding design, but it really doesn't grow out of the lit review.
So what did you give that section?
11 out of 15. A C plus.
I give a 12, so I was close on one.
So my overall rating was a 68 out of 100. A D plus. And when you go through it in this way, it makes it sound much worse than it is sometimes. But
well, it clarifies why.
Okay, go back to page one. This is one of the things that you're not going to do, I'm sure, is to use statements like, first paragraph, unattractive children were even shown to have fewer interactions. Or the next paragraph, they almost all complained of being ridiculed. And those kinds of statements are made throughout these first few pages. Page three, facial disfigurement is far larger. Down below, rejection of those whose faces are marred is even greater. Down at the bottom, the most common response. None of those tell me how frequent they are. Okay? So whenever you can, put some sort of metric to it. And whether it's quote-unquote qualitative research or quote-unquote quantitative research, I need to know, you know, to say most teachers. I don't know if that's 51% or 99%. Okay, and it makes a big difference in how I interpret it as a reader if it's 99% versus 51%. But most would be accurate in both cases. So the assign a metric wherever you can, number one, and number two, always talk about the quality of the evidence that you're considering. And each of you will have to handle that differently, but you want to find a way to help the reader understand how you judged quality. So the one approach I've found to be best at that I've mentioned before, is to give an example, to say studies were coded as to the quality of the evidence. For example, a good study was the Williams and Jones studies that did this, 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 and this, and they were rated good because they did this and that. The Browning study was rated low because it had these problems, or they did this, 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 and this. So readers get a sense, because they may say, well, boy, I don't think that's a bad thing that Browning did. I call that a good study still. Okay, so they know where you're coming from. And I've used that example with studies, but it applies if you're looking at the incidence of depression among women. So you would still need to give some sort of idea about the quality of that evidence, or how often reviews of the literature are cited in textbooks. Okay, the research question. There's a research question at the bottom of page two, and there's an objective at the top of page three. I really don't care if you use research questions, hypotheses, or objectives. But it ought to be clear to the reader, and if you look at your self-evaluation sheet here, that they're clearly worded, answerable, comprehensive enough, and that they're a logical conclusion from the assertions you're making in your problem statement. I mean, I gave them 8 out of 10.
Thank you!
They got a B on that.
Bless you.
And then these are minor differences. So the objective wants to determine if children attribute more positive characteristics to a picture of a child with facial anomalies. The question on the previous page wants to know whether reading about facially disfigured children will whether children will have more positive attitudes towards facially disfigured children generally. I think the question could be raised whether having positive attitudes towards facially disfigured children generally is the same as attributing positive characteristics to a picture of a child with facial disfigurement. I mean, it's not a biggie, but I mean, I'd have some questions as to whether that's quite the same.
The difference goes even deeper. In their statement, they say that they're going to be reading about a facially disfigured child, and the objective, they're going to be hearing a story.
Yeah.
I mean, just another, you're right, it's
right.
Nitpicky, but...
Yeah. And I think it's very appropriate to be that nitpicky about your own work. When it's other people's work, you know, I cut them a little slack, perhaps. But those things have a sort of cumulative effect over time. When you read enough little inconsistencies, you can't quite put your finger on why you're rating this proposal lower. But there's something there. Okay. So, for example, I mean, the one that I hadn't noticed before about that they say in the back that they found differences between boys and girls, but they only included girls in their study. I'd say, wow, if they made that mistake, how many other mistakes are they making? In terms of quality control in general, how'd you feel about it?
A few grammatical mistakes, but way better than some of the other ones
we read. Okay. So it's not hard to look good if your reference group is a bunch of stuffed owls. Look at the first paragraph cites Dion 73 and Dion 74.
Mm-hmm.
Those the same study or different studies?
Well,
there's only one in the reference. Okay.
Yeah.
Or is that just so they either left one out of the references?
Yeah.
Or
it's the same study and they goofed it.
Or it's the same study and they goofed it. Look down the page a little further.
Yeah.
Stricker et al. In the one. In the third paragraph, and then in the fourth paragraph, it's Stricker 79. Those the same or different studies? I suspect they're the same,
and
it's just sloppy.
They are the same, it was just sloppy.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know for sure it's the same because of the previous evidence I just gave you. I mean, maybe they left it out of the references the second time. So, but I suspect that they're the same. On the next page, it's also Stricker et al. Let me see here. On the bottom of page 3, Constable and Bernstein, instead of Nad Bernstein.
Yeah.
But if you go to the references, it's just Constable 79.
Oh my word.
Poor
Nad.
Okay.
Poor Nad. Poor Nad.
Nad's
well,
been lost.
Yeah.
Bernstein
so,
and Constable are two separate.
Yeah, so they should have referenced that Constable 1979 and Bernstein
1976.
Or maybe it really is Constable and Bernstein.
Yeah, and we just don't know.
Right.
Okay.
Wow.
Good point.
Okay.
Okay.
On page 4, first time they refer to to Bender and Weinstein, it should have the year with it.
Oh, they don't.
But they have it at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do down below.
So.
This is the first time you refer to it if you have to stick to the first reference.
I guess you don't have to, but you're supposed
you're
to.
You're supposed to.
Well, you're supposed to, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to sort of jump back and forth here. Look at the page 4, the paragraph with Bender and Weinstein. Says these results indicate at the bottom. These results indicate that at least one third of this group have emotional difficulties severe enough to be referred for professional help. Can you get that out of that? What's presented in that paragraph?
No. In fact, I underlined that. I'm like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe to an experienced clinician who knows mm-hmm. about the CMI, the Cornell Medical Index, it would indicate that. So I'm not saying that is not true, but I'm saying that the educated layperson couldn't get it from that paragraph. And that's the sort of nitpickiness to yourself you need to do. I mean, everything you write, you should say, is this really making the point that I want to make? Could someone else understand this? Or do I just understand it because I know the field so well? Or because I read this other article that I forgot to reference in here? Up above, talking about McGregor, it says, even regarded as social outcasts, they frequently develop psychological disturbances. the majority of patients suffered from behavioral difficulties. Again, just give me a metric, quantify it. Instead of saying, and down below, instead of saying the results indicate that, that at least a third, takes no more room to say, if the evidence was there, of course, but these results indicate the 38%. You know, that's much better than at least a third, because at least a third could be 33% or 45% or 82%.
Okay? It could be even 26%.
Not at least a third.
At least a third?
No, at least a third has to be more than 33 or more, 33.3 or more. Okay, on page 5, there are some pretty strong assertions with no supporting evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So, starting out, there is unanimous agreement, I mean, unanimous by whom,
mm-hmm.
that facial disfigurement is a grave handicap that affects the sufferer's ability to function in society. I mean, they haven't provided us with any evidence to support that. And it's really not central to the problem statement. Okay. Down below, near the bottom, a child who has a normal idea of himself would not grow up to have so many of the social and psychological problems which the facially disfigured adult has been demonstrated to have. They haven't given us any evidence on that at all. I mean, this isn't a study about what happens in adulthood to people who had facial disfigurement as children. That would be an interesting study, but nothing that is in their problem statement or is relevant to what they're doing, and it's not supported by the evidence.
I did have a question about what they meant by normal. Like the absence of physical malformation or disability?
It's whatever I do.
So you're the metric
no.
for normal. That was big for
no,
me.
No,
there are no key terms defined.
I think that's a good point. So now, you can see it in other people's work. The key is to be able to see it in your own.
Yeah.
And that's what's really tough. Okay. Hopefully this little self-evaluation form will help you on that some. But it's hard to do. Okay. Yeah, on page 6 and 7, I made notes that Doug pointed out earlier. I kept saying, results, results, where are the results? And then I get a little further back and I say, oh, here are the results. That's an interesting way to present it. All right. Oh, what happened to my... Yeah, page 8. Read the first paragraph and tell me if, based on what you see there, regression towards the mean is a problem. Says it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I read it twice, so time to read it once. So, Rachel, is regression towards the mean a problem?
It doesn't look like that to me.
How come?
Well,
you had a 50-50 chance that you could right, so now you've got to back it up.
Just because the control group score improves, and the experimental group scores improve as well. And just because there's a difference in change doesn't mean that it can be attributed to that.
Okay, so what would you have to know for it to be attributed to regression?
Wait,
do y'all agree with Rachel?
Yeah, it could have been testing or instrumentation.
The pretest scores, right?
You have to know if the subjects were selected because they were
deviant.
They're deviant.
So read the next paragraph. Is regression a problem there?
It could be because Cohen chose her subjects because of their negative attitudes, but this
isn't
the Gottlieb one.
That's right.
Yeah.
So in the second paragraph, regression is a plausible threat to validity. But I mean, it could be in the first paragraph, but we don't know that. I mean, they haven't given us any reason to suspect regression. We don't know how subjects were selected in the first one. So you were exactly right, Rachel. So the fact that the control group improved some and the experimental group improved more doesn't mean that it's regression. It could be a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me see, we're running out of time, so let's skip to the analysis section.
Yep. Yeah, that was...
Well, and this class is on lit review, so I don't expect a very long procedure section. I think a good lit review always leads to procedures. A good lit review always says, this is what we know, this is what we don't know, and here's how we could solve some of what we don't know. But I'm not expecting you to give a full-blown dissertation proposal research or procedure section here. I'm expecting you to say, based on what we've done here, here's a study that is logical and consistent with the review of literature, and here's an outline of how it should be conducted. But having said that, the chi-square test is going to be how they're going to analyze this. Is that sensible or not? And is it anything in the lit review that would convince you that it's sensible? So it may be sensible but not supported by the lit review. It may be not sensible and not supported. So which is it? Because it's not supported by the lit review, I'll give you that much. Because they never mentioned how they analyzed it. But that would have been a very appropriate function of the lit review. To say, other people have tried to answer this question, and here's how they've done it. And based on how they've tried to do it, these are what we understand and what we don't understand. Part of what we don't understand, I think that was Rachel's study, of saying other people have asked this question, but they haven't done it in a way that yields correct answers. So that's a very appropriate function of a lit review, is to say, here's how people have tried to analyze these sorts of questions before, here's what's good and bad about it. So they don't do that at all. They just propose a chi-square. So based on what you know about a chi-square, though, is that sensible?
Yeah.
Is it the best? I mean, there are differences of opinion on these sorts of things, but I'd say it's not even very sensible. Mm-hmm. What does chi-square tell you? Tells you that in an n by n way table, that the cell frequencies are not distributed as you would expect them to be based on the marginal frequencies. Mm-hmm. That's certainly reasonable, but what we want to know here is whether, I mean, that would be consistent with the answer to the question we want to have. But what we really want to know are point estimates. Chi-square doesn't give you point estimates. We want to know whether people that went through the experimental group had more favorable attitudes towards facially disfigured children than people that went through the control group. And we want to know by how much, I would think. All that chi-square would tell you is that they're more or less. So it is consistent with, but I don't think it goes near far enough. And there's no reason to use chi-square here. There's nothing about the setup of this study that would limit the use of parametric procedures, okay? And so a t-test, an f-test, regression analysis, I mean, there's a lot of ways you could do it. What's the other problem with chi-square? That would be very, well, somewhat relevant here. How many kids were in this study, do you remember? 90 to 100. So statistical power is not as big a concern as if they had 30, but it's still a concern. And chi-square is not a very powerful test. So if you care about statistical significance, some people don't, so if you don't care about it, don't do either chi-square or t-test. But if you care about it, then you ought to pick a procedure that, within the constraints that your study has, gives you as much statistical power as possible. And chi-square doesn't do it. All right. Now, the reason we spend time going through this is so that you'll be able to apply these lessons to what you're writing. So this self-evaluation will help you do that to some degree, but you know, you'll have 6 papers and they'll all be very different, and that's the way it should be, but I think there are some general principles. So any questions about what we've talked about?
Yeah. If we went through this carefully and applied it to our paper, is that probably going to be good enough?
No.
Awesome.
If you went through it carefully and had the same opinion about how you applied it as I do, then it's going to be good enough. Okay. And I think, based on what we've seen in here, usually, but today's ratings were a little bit off from that, but usually you all are more critical than I am. So, but you're the outlier today, because I gave this a 68 and you gave it a 93 or something. But, so.
And there's a reason for that.
Okay.
It was your friend's study, wasn't it?
No, actually, I did this 2 weeks ago before we met on the last one, and then I just didn't come back and adjust. Having learned what I learned last time, I thought, wow, I'm just going to go with that.
Good.
Which was probably not wise.
Yeah. But so if you go through these things and really do all these things, then you know, you're going to be in pretty good shape. But very few of you will really turn in one of these with low ratings. You know, and so let's say that you just run out of time to write this paper, and you know it's a bad paper, but you're still going to give positive ratings on this, just hoping that I won't notice that it's a bad paper. And so then I probably won't agree. Okay. And I would do the same.
So you want us to turn this in with our paper?
Yeah.
And I know I'm not trying to create more work or anything for you, but I'm really terrified that I'm going to get a bad score on my final paper and it's going to ruin my grades.
And your life.
And my life. Right? So is there a possibility that we could turn it in earlier and get feedback? Or, I mean, I'm not trying to create more work for you, but would that be a possibility?
It's a possibility, but it's unlikely. Like, okay. just in this sense, if all six of you took advantage of that, I just wouldn't have time to get to them.
Right.
If one of you does and it hits me at the right time,
right,
then I'll try, but I won't guarantee it.
Okay.
If
I'll read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see, that is an excellent thing to do. I mean, I think I hardly ever submit a grant that I don't have other people read, and when I do, I'm sorry I did. Okay, just because there's a big controversy in the field that I do work in about whether sign language is better than auditory oral, okay? And I proposed about a year ago a national needs assessment looking at what families are getting, and I put together this board of people that some are on the one side, some are on the other side. I mean, I really tried to write this from the perspective of an ecumenical person that says it's really up to parents and I have no bias in this, or at least the study's not going to be conducted in any way that has bias. And some of the really people I respect, but they are radical, militant, bilingual, bicultural sign language people, they read it and said, I thought you told us this was ecumenical. And I said, it is. And they said, look at page 17, line 4. And I said, oh yeah, I didn't mean that quite that way. You know, I mean, I wasn't trying to be duplicitous, but it just sort of crept in. And the same thing happens with fuzzy thinking and with, so it would be great to have other people read it. And if you turn them in early, the earlier you get them in, the more likely I'll be to look at them. But I can't guarantee it. Okay?
Thanks.
When you mean turn it in, it's just...
No, turn in the full paper. Yeah, turning in just this isn't going to get you much, probably.
But if we were off on this...
Yeah,
points,
right?
So if you're off on these bullets, I mean, so if you turn me another version of your problem statement, but I've seen your problem statements at least twice. We've talked about them in class. Some of them I've seen more than that. But you may have changed. So if you send me a problem statement, the chances of me getting through that are pretty good. You know, if it's a bulleted problem statement, you know, does this make sense? Picked a whole new topic, I'm going to do this, how am I? And there's nothing wrong with doing that. If you've reached the point that based on your review in the library, you found out that you can't support the assertions in your problem statement, better to jump ship now, start over. I mean, it's going to be a tough, it's going to be a time crunch at the end.
A tough 13 days.
Yeah, right.
So we can assume that our problem statements to this point, you've told us what you thought.
Yeah.
We either listened
and
didn't listen.
Yeah. And most of them were in pretty good shape.
Okay.
You know. So
don't mess it up from here on out.
That's right. But now the key is, remember your problem statement that I read was in pretty much independent of any evidence supporting those problem statements. And so it may have made sense, like all animals that live in the ocean are fish, whales live in the ocean, therefore whales are fish. You know, it's a perfect logical problem statement, but if that's the nature of your policy, then you're in deep trouble, because I'll look at the literature and I'll say, you can't support this. So it's not just, I only looked at the logic of your problem statement, not at the quality of the evidence supporting it, and that's what the review of literature is all about. Okay. Rachel?
Well, my only other question is there any other time in your mind where a review of the literature, like meta-analysis, isn't applicable? So let's say that I'm finding lots of literature, and I'm not finding a meta-analysis that's been done before in that specialized way, and I don't think that it's beneficial to my lit review to do one. What would be your opinion on that?
It depends on how you define the term meta-analysis.
Okay.
So if you define the term meta-analysis as being something that uses standardized mean difference effect sizes, then absolutely, you're right.
Okay.
But if you define the term meta-analysis, as I've tried to do in here, of saying a good integrated review, or meta-analysis, if you will, has four characteristics. You look at all the evidence on the topic. You find a way to represent that evidence on a common metric, and it may well not be a standardized mean difference effect size.
That's my problem. I don't know how to do.
It maybe the common metric is better, worse.
Okay.
Maybe the common metric is present, absent. Okay, and we've had several examples of ones like that. Maybe the common metric is improved, didn't improve, or helped, didn't help. Okay. Then the third criteria is how do study and characteristics co-vary with that common metric. And the fourth is, do your conclusions, are they consistent with and linked to the evidence? So if that's your definition of an integrated review, and it's mine, then I don't think there's ever a case where those principles don't apply.
Okay.
Okay? But the key is a common metric that makes sense for your body of research. And no one's ever given me an example yet. Some have tried, okay, where they've said, well, this is my body of research. I don't think there is a common metric. And if you define it as a standardized mean difference effect size, then absolutely, you're right. But, you know, so you have to take a broad view of what the common metric is. And you have to be consistent with it throughout the evidence you're looking at, though, too. Did you have a question?
That was kind of one of my questions. I'm looking at doing a literature review in a specific field. There's lots of quantitative, I know you don't like the differentiation, but there's lots of qualitative studies. And so I was wondering, would it be okay to do the qualitative studies as one part of the literature review and then look at the quantitative at the other, so
sure.
I can do the effect size for those?
Sure.
Okay.
And so that your assertion in your problem statement. And, you know, I've made my pitch about these terms qualitative and quantitative don't help us. But if you want to ignore that pitch, I'm fine with it. I mean, I am alone pretty much in that perspective. So I'm not going to grade you down if you were to say in your lit review, I looked at the qualitative research first, I found 18 studies, and then I looked at the quantitative research and there were 17 studies. From the qualitative studies, this is what we learned, and from the quantitative studies, this is what we learned. And then it would be useful then, usually, to say, and those general conclusions from the two either agree or disagree.
Yeah.
If they disagree, why might they disagree? Is it because the quote-unquote quantitative studies weren't sensitive enough to the nuances that were happening in the qualitative studies that they just missed it?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it that the qualitative studies were so mushy and soft-headed and that they missed the truth? I mean, or neither one.
Okay. So how, in that type of situation, how would you go about presenting that, I mean, integrating it, so you don't have to say, here's a qualitative, here's a quantitative? Does that make sense? How would you do it? Would you just do the...
Depends on what you mean by qualitative and quantitative. Like, most people around here that say, well, I'm doing a qualitative research study, they end up doing questionnaires and surveys and observations, which I think are very quantitative.
Oh, they're totally right. We're talking, you know, interviews and
Those
kinds of things.
Remember, one of the biggest limitations that you can't get around of a lit review is that you can only integrate what other people have done.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they did a bunch of interviews and did them the way that I would do them, then they would be very quantifiable. I mean, but if instead of that, they just said, we did interviews with 150 teachers, and we found that what they were most concerned about was low pay. And that's all the data there is in that study, okay? Well, you can't make a silk's purse out of a sow's ear. I mean, that's all the data there is. And so it would be nice to know that instead of most, that it was 73% rated it on a 6-point Likert scale at an average of whatever it is, but it's not there. And so you just report what is there. And then you draw conclusions about how that impacts on the study you're proposing. So for example, I was just reading, I know what it is. It's the grant I'm supposed to finish writing by tomorrow evening. So looking at using telemedicine techniques to deliver services to children. And boy, there are dozens of quote-unquote studies out there, but almost none of them do any sort of real evaluation. I mean, it's all testimonial that we did this and it was wonderful and we're sure we saved money and kids got good services. My critique is gonna be, I found 17 studies, but only 2 of those studies provided any sort of information about what the results really were or what the costs were.
Okay.
Therefore, the next study that needs to be done, and those studies served a role, they had a purpose, but we shouldn't keep doing those sorts of studies. The next study that I'm proposing is going to collect some real cost data on how much time people spend, whether kids really got better, etc.
Okay, that's the connection that
right.
I haven't been able to make for this.
Yeah,
study.
And so you say, based on what I found, this is what I'm going to do.
Okay.
I'm studying obesity treatments. Everyone says that the best measure is percent of body fat loss, but only 13% of the previous studies report percent of body fat loss. So in my study, I'm going to report percent of body fat loss.
Okay.
So that's where the link is between what you review and what you propose. And you also need to make the link of saying, this is what's been done before, therefore, this is what needs to be done next. What too many people do is they've already decided what needs to be done next. And then they report what's been done before, and then there's this cognitive dissonance between what's being proposed and what the evidence just was. So I just read a review for a grant proposal of someone else, and they, I don't think I'll use that example. I'll give something away, I shouldn't. So, you know, they cited 4 or 5 other previous research studies, and then they said, therefore, I'm going to do this study. And I read the 2 and I said, there's no therefore. You know, the findings in that study don't lead at all to this study. They were completely different groups of people. You're proposing something completely different. There's no reason why, if this is what you found here, you would do this here. And so that's what's important in it. Any other questions? Okay, I've held you too long, but I'm going to make up for it. I think. The next class, we were going to do a research critique number 4. And there's some interesting things in that research critique related to internal validity, etc. But you know what? I don't think you care about them. And so if you'd rather not meet next week and take that time to work on your papers, then if everyone's in favor of that, we'll do that. But you still have to stay a few minutes and fill out your class evaluations. Okay. And I'll still answer questions. But Dave, you have another one?
Yeah. As far as modeling goes, what literature review would you turn us to as a model of good reviews?
You know, the problem with answering that question is if you're doing the same kind of study that they're doing, then it becomes a great model. But if you aren't, then it doesn't. So I think the one on eating disorders is probably the best lit review we read. But you know, unless you're doing that kind of study, it really wouldn't help you much.
Okay.
So but the principles that we've talked about over and over, you know, if you look at the various lit reviews we've looked at, it's the same principles each time. You know, and there's, I mean, this one is actually, I think, in terms of a heuristic, is one of my favorites. You know, I mean, it doesn't score quite as well, but I think it really makes the points well about what you need to do.
Do you want these?
In your lit review.